everyone. This is Val Groth from the Inspiration with Val podcast. You are listening to Steve Stewart on the Money Plan SOS podcast, helping everyday Americans to pay attention and not interest.
Welcome back to Freedom Fighters. This is Steve Stewart, your humble servant and personal finance architect, helping everyday Americans design a house of financial freedom. Thank you so much for listening and spending time with me today and spending time on your finances. Even if it is just listening to this silly show, you're spending time on your finances so that you avoid doing other things that maybe aren't as productive. Maybe you would be just, you know, watching TV. There's nothing wrong with watching TV, but the more time that you spend focusing and learning on finances, the better your finances get. I'm not saying you have to go and get a degree in finance. Why would you want to do that if you don't want to be a finance major? Simply paying attention to your money is all you need to get ahead in life. We have so many impulse purchases that steal our wealth. We have so many mixed messages out there that tell us to go and build your credit score, and we start chasing a number rather than chasing financial health and wellness. So by simply pushing play on the button that you're listening to the show on, you're saying, you're voting with your fingers and your ears and your mind, I vote to pay attention to personal finance, and I'm going to be more educated in this area than the majority of Americans. And if you're new to the show, welcome. This is a safe place. I might give you my opinion on money and how it works and tell you what to do with your money, but it's up to you ultimately to make those changes in your life. And I can't tell you what to do. I might be able to persuade you to think differently. Think different than the culture. Think differently than the messages of marketing that are telling you that you deserve this because you work hard. All I'm asking is that you pay attention. And if you want to learn more after the show, then go to stevestewart.me. That's where you'll find all of the resources, previous episodes. You'll even be able to sign up for the free Attention to Money resource guide. And you'll get occasional email reminders about when it's time to pay attention to specific things with money. So you're not focusing on it all the time, and you're not just letting it fall to the wayside either. Like right now, we are in the prime time of tax season. When is it a good time to review retirement accounts? Do you do that every month? Do you do it once a quarter or once a year? When's the best time to do it? I'll send reminders to you via email. All you have to do is go to stevestewart.me, sign up for the free resource guide there. It's the Attention to Money Guide. You'll get email reminders throughout the year. I promise I won't spam you, but I will keep you informed when it's time to pay attention, and you'll also get some extra bonuses from time to time as well. One of the things that I have to personally battle with in the Stewart household is the fact that my wife makes more money than I do. She brings in more money. She's had some wonderful opportunities. She's taken those opportunities. She's improved herself and her performance at the job to where she actually got a new job earlier in 2014 that allowed her to stay home. She's making more money and working out of the house. I mean, how cool is that? It's like a dream come true. Actually, it was a prayer from God that got answered. But having her making more money than me puts a weird dynamic on this old-fashioned type relationship. I mean, I'm an old guy. I think in old terms and, you know, the old way of thinking where the guy brings home the bacon, that went away many years ago. When we were growing up, that's the way we thought it was going to be. And then now that we're here, we're looking back and we're saying, well, how did that happen? When did that change? And then there's also, like I said, this weird dynamic around the money. Yes, we're okay. We talk about the money because we focus on it. We do pay attention to it. We do our budget every month, and we're actually reviewing finances more frequently than that. So we're doing okay, but we don't neglect the fact that it's still kind of weird. She still feels this extra responsibility put on her shoulders that I didn't put there and I would love to take away from her. But what do you do in that situation? Well, I started reading a book called When She Makes More. It's by Farnoosh Torabi. She's our guest here today. We'll be talking to her in just a minute. This book has got some really interesting statistics and studies, you know, the things that I love. And of course, Farnoosh writes a story around all of this to give us some real actionable steps that can help me. And hopefully you'll get some value out of this as well as our culture and our world finds more and more women are making more than their men. Is this new dynamic wrong? How does it affect the family unit? How can we make it so that it's not so weird? All of that will be answered here in the 177th episode of the Money Plan SOS podcast.
What's really important for both the husband and wife in the relationship is to understand that while gender roles don't matter and shouldn't matter and they shouldn't dictate who should do what in the marriage, gender is still real and it's important to respect.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm bringing on Farnoosh Torabi. She's known for the contributing editor of the Today Show and Money Magazine, as well as starting her own new podcast, which is called So Money. But today we're having her on for a conversation about her most recent book, When She Makes More, 10 Rules for Breadwinning Women. Welcome to the show, Farnoosh Torabi.
Well, thank you, Steve, very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
This book, it's very well written. You've been a journalist for quite some time, haven't you? Can you tell us a little bit more about your background in journalism and writing and producing?
Sure. I went to the Columbia School of Journalism after college, and I coupled that degree, a master's degree in journalism, with an undergrad degree in finance, and just quickly started working in the finance news media space, first as a lowest on the totem pole intern, glorified intern at Money Magazine, or I'm happy to say now I'm a contributing editor. And then I just gradually started working in other spaces from print to television. I worked at New York One News, which is our local 24-hour cable news station here in New York. It's like the CNN headline news of New York City. And I ran their business desk there, covering everything from small business to the stock market to the job market and everything in between. And then I moved on to the internet. Working with Jim Cramer at thestreet.com, where I hosted and actually launched their video platform and did a series of great videos there. And since, I guess, 2009, I've been this one-woman band of creating content across multi-platforms, now a podcast, and I'm having a fantastic time. I've had a lucky career.
You say lucky, but I think you put the opportunities in front of you, so when the door opened, you were able to walk through.
I am an opportunist.
And you would call yourself an independent woman, except now that you are married, you have a spouse. So how long have you been married now to, I think his name was Tim?
Yes. Tim and I have been married going on 3 years, and we just welcomed our firstborn last summer,
Yay.
Evan. Yay. So he's 7 months, and I'm not sure when this will air, but he is at a stage now where he's into grabbing everything. He's talking like in baby talk and showing more and more of his personality. And it's he's very restless. So that keeps me also very restless.
So you've got a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
The reason I'm having you on again is because of the book When She Makes More. This is a book for women. You have the 10 rules for breadwinning women when women make more in the household than the man. Now, I'm reading the book. Of course, I'm interested with the statistics, but do you think this book is just appealing to me because I'm a personal finance nerd, or do you think that men in general will benefit just as much by reading When She Makes More as their female counterparts?
I hope so. I actually wanted to subtitle this book 10 Rules for Breadwinning Women and the Men Who Love Them. But I'll let you in on a little secret. My publisher didn't actually think that would be... that would really do anything, because in their minds, men are not going to be buying this book, that primarily it will be women. And the men who will read it are maybe the husbands of the women who've bought the book and have left it on the kitchen counter, or maybe it's wishful thinking on my part that I think that men would be inclined to read this. But I think that however they get to the book, whether they purchased it directly or they found it on the coffee table, I think there's a lot in there for them. And at the end of the day, this book, while it's directed towards a female audience, it is meant to help relationships. It takes two for any of this advice to really work. And so men would benefit definitely from reading this book.
I think men and women in general will do better just by working together in the finances, no matter who makes the money. But we'll talk more about that in a minute. But I wanted to know what you think. Are the old-fashioned rules of men bringing home the bacon wrong?
They're not wrong. They're just... changing. The rules are changing. The expectations are changing. I would love for my husband to bring home the bacon sometimes. You know, I think that in every relationship, there should be this understanding that the money should be fluid. The income that's coming into the household, you know, it should all be one person's responsibility to bring home that bacon. And I think that it needs to be a ground rule understanding that while I may be the breadwinner today, we need to be ready for a day that perhaps I can no longer support this role, or I don't have the opportunity to support this role because I got laid off, or because I want to not work for a year and try something new. And I think that if there is that kind of base level understanding in your relationship, and this is a relatively new mentality, I think going back to our parents' generation, it was expected for the man to bring home the bacon. And if he didn't, it was sort of he may have started to doubt his masculinity and society would have looked down upon him. And actually, Steve, these days, there is still that stigma. So I'm not saying it's completely eradicated. But I do think that it's not wrong for him to bring home the bacon. It's just that there needs to be an understanding that if he's doing it now, he may not in 6 years or in 3 months, and that there needs to be this kind of give and take in the relationship.
What do you see as the major cultural, or maybe it's an economic shift, that caused this world to change from men working outside the home and women working just as hard, but at home and not outside as with a traditional job?
So you're asking, how did we sort of arrive at this place of more female breadwinners in their marriages?
Yes.
So it's a few forces at play. I would say, one, we're seeing more women go to college, go to grad school. Actually, there are a higher number of women, percentage-wise, graduating from college and graduate school than men right now, and that trend is expected to continue. So you have these women who are highly educated, certified, and theoretically better positioned to get jobs, and they are getting, in some cases, more jobs than men. There are certain industries that are growing, that are booming, and they're industries that we often identify as sort of female-led industries, like nursing and healthcare and education and services. And the male-dominant industries, such as construction, manufacturing, even finance to an extent, have been contracting over the past 5-10 years. And so there is this kind of job scarcity for some men where it's not as much of a case for women. And then you've got women who are more educated. And I also think that, everyone is sort of really into pursuing their quote unquote passion and dreams. And it's not necessarily about finding that steady job anymore that pays you a 401k and health benefits. I mean, those jobs are actually like not as abundant anymore. So people are trying to find their way through this new economy as well. And in that process, perhaps finding themselves not working for 6 months and then working from home and then maybe starting a business. And we're also seeing more women-led businesses and women. I just on my podcast the other day, I had on Stephanie Burns, who's the founder of Chic CEO, and she said that there are 1,200 female entrepreneurs starting businesses every day. When you look at those sort of stats and trends, it's no surprise that you have now women in relationships earning more than their male counterparts, their spouses. The other thing that happened during the recession, Steve, is that we saw more men lose their jobs than women. And we're still recovering from that to some extent. As I said, industries like real estate, manufacturing, finance, shedding a lot of jobs, a lot of them held by men.
Do you think we lost more jobs held by men because there were more men in the workforce? Or is that just the jobs that were being lost were being held by men?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I always thought of it as more of an economic thing. The market was no longer supporting these jobs. Obviously with the financial crisis, financial institutions were becoming very vulnerable and some went away completely. And then we have the real estate market crashing. And so a lot of those real estate jobs went away. So for me, I always looked at it more of as like a shift that's happening in the job market because of supply demand.
Yeah, I think that's true too. But also, if we look at our culture as it is today and compare that to the culture that our parents grew up with, I think that, and I'm putting my own opinion here, but maybe you can support that or disprove it with the studies and the things you have in your book, that now more people are willing to go into the workplace and not be at home, more females, because we want more. We buy bigger houses and we need more money to be able to support that type of a lifestyle. Do you agree or disagree with that at all?
I do agree that there is this cultural influence that we feel like we have to have a certain kind of home and we have to have two cars and we have to go on vacation every year. And so there is this kind of like a burden of earning, because then it just implies that you have to spend more and create more complexity in your life as a financial complexity. But I don't think that is specifically why we're seeing more women earning more than men. Maybe that's why we're seeing two income households at large. But I think this dynamic of she making more than him is more rooted in what I talked about earlier, which is the fact that more women are going and attending college and graduating, more women are starting businesses, more women are marrying late, also later in life, as are men. So we're marrying also at a time where we perhaps have established some financial foundation. You know, we have savings, we have some net worth. And I would also say that we live in an era now where we're open to outsourcing and help. And so this idea of, especially for women, I think this mantra of having it all and doing it all, that's all for debate. But I think that that is a voice in her head. You know, I should strive for the best and I should not settle and I should try to work and have my family and be the best wife and be the best person version of myself as I can. And so all of that, I think, perhaps fuels women continuing to work and make good money. You know, and I will say, though, that where we see the biggest sort of income disparity, or I should say...
That's a dangerous word, but you start using it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, income disparity, it's, you know, while women are not making more than men in the workplace still, women are still only making like 81 cents for the man's dollar, where we see that gap shrink or be less severe is among the millennial generation. So when you look at women and men between the ages of like 20 and 30 in metropolitan areas, major metropolitan areas, so Boston, New York, Chicago, DC, LA, you're seeing that there, and this is according to Pew Research, that the income disparity, women are making like 92 cents for every man's dollar, which is still not great, but it's better. And I think because we're talking about adults here who don't have kids, they're not married necessarily, it becomes a lot more difficult when you have a family and you have responsibilities at home to maintain your momentum at work, especially as a woman. And that's where the book, part of where the book steps in. The book is not just a financial book, but it really talks about how to navigate and thrive when you're the top earning woman and you want to continue working at work and continue your income stream while you might have young kids at home, while you're married and you have these other responsibilities at play. I don't care what anyone says, but when you're a woman and you're a mom, and now I'm a mom so I can speak from experience, you are torn. You know, I go on business trips now and I limit my business trips because I don't want to be away from home for more than one night. If I do have to go overnight somewhere and maybe it's a 3-4 night stay, I will bring my son with me and I will figure out childcare, either flying my mother in or bringing my nanny along or my husband comes with me. I mean, I think there are a lot of great fathers out there that might have that same instinct, but I think this is more of a female motherly instinct, right? It's like, I don't want to be away from my kids. And I feel almost, I don't want to say guilty, but I feel like if I can do it, I want to do it. You know, I feel like very privileged that I could even do something like this where I can, you know, bring my child with me to a business trip. But this is something that I have actually kind of made as a rule of thumb for myself. My son will be fine if I leave him at home, and babies don't hold grudges, as I've heard. But for me as a mom, you know, it does hurt me, and to a point where it's inconceivable that I would leave him for, and because I have left him for 5 nights, and that was the worst, and I will never do that again, at least not right now, yeah. You know, at this stage.
Yeah, I think it's a different story once your child becomes, you know, they're in their teens, obviously, you'll want to kick them out of the house, but you can't do that yet. But no, I understand that as well. I don't think that's something that will change with the millennials either, that there's some kind of a maternal instinct that you want to be with your child more often than the man will be. Not in every case, but I think that's true. So that's got to have some kind of an effect on the family unit. Have you found that in the studies that when she makes more, but she's being pulled away from being at home with the children, is that affecting the family unit in some way?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it was funny, when I was doing the whole media circuit around this book, people would say, oh, when she makes more, it's a problem. And I said, no, it's not culturally a problem. It's not that when she makes more, society is going to fall to its knees. It's actually, though, when she makes more in her relationship, and they have kids perhaps, or even if they don't, that's where it gets complex. I wouldn't say problematic, but it's hairy. It's complex. And one of the things, many of the things that we found, I did a nationwide survey of over 1,000 women in this country, split between women who make more and women who make less than their partners. And what we found is that when she makes more, she's less satisfied with her relationship. She does feel overwhelmed. Sometimes she wishes that she didn't make more. She has to deal with scrutiny from society and friends and family. She feels guilty. So all these emotional issues. And outside of my survey, there were tons of really great academic data and studies around this topic. And I think one of the most startling for me is that when she makes more and she senses it may be a threat to her marriage, well, primarily because he feels threatened by her income. Mm-hmm. And that is something we haven't even touched on, but it's a big part of why I wanted to write the book, that when she makes more and she feels that her income and her status at work is a threat to the marriage, she will not work or she will try to make less. I think that's really sad. I think that's something that we need to recognize, that this is something that women are grappling with, that we feel vulnerable making more, and we need to put a stop to it. We need to support these women and support these families ultimately to feel like they can win in these kinds of dynamics.
And you're not saying anywhere in the book that the man should just be the stay-at-home caregiver.
No.
What you're saying is that the couple should work together when she makes more than he does.
I've actually gone on the record to voice a lot of, I have to be very careful because especially now as a parent, you know, no one likes to be told how to live their life or what's right or what's wrong. But I, you know, as someone who comes from a very financial reporting background and I look at the numbers, and for me, numbers are very real. And what's real is that when there is a stay-at-home parent, whether it's dad or mom, the household unit can sometimes be more fragile and there's more chance for divorce. It can be very, very difficult because imagine one person bringing home the entire paycheck that's a lot of pressure on that person and also on the household. So my advice is not to necessarily have him stay home, or even more so, I wouldn't want her to stay home. But since we're talking about female breadwinners, you hear a lot about dad staying home and it works for some people, but I think do that if you are completely at peace with the challenges that may be ahead. Whereas, you know, if you lose your job, do you have a plan B? Do you have savings? do you have enough financial confidence to do this? But I think what's most important is to remember that whatever life you design for yourselves, whether it's I work, I don't, I work part-time from home, out of the house, do what you want to do. That is really, you feel like you're at peace with, because if your goal, if the purpose of designing your life in the way that you have is to make sure that your kids are happy and taken care of and the family unit is happy, if you're unhappy with your choice, it will trickle down. And there have been studies that show that it doesn't matter necessarily whether you worked or didn't work part-time, full-time. As far as the kids are concerned, what's important is that you actually came home every day with a smile on your face or had something productive to say about your day at work, that you didn't come home every day depressed or unhappy, or because especially for a small child, they're not going to understand why did dad leave for 14 hours and came home miserable. You know, that's really going to impact that child negatively growing up, their perspective of what it means to have a father who works or a father who doesn't work, you know. So just keep that in mind. And I know we don't all have the privilege of doing what we love, but it is what it is.
Yes. Now, I have a 60%, 40% split men versus women listeners to my in my listening audience. So I know the majority of my listeners are men, and they may be in the same situation I am. I'm not the sole breadwinner. My wife actually makes more than I do. So I'm feeling you here. I understand what you're saying, and I'm reading the book, and I'm just soaking it in, learning a lot. And I'm wondering, what is the first step for a couple where she makes more to balance out the relationship and make it so that's not so weird?
Yeah. Well, I would have a tip for her and a tip for him. And the big tip for her is don't think that just because you make more that you have to inherit all the other responsibilities of the marriage, of the household, that you have a partner, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think as women, we forget that our partner is not just our soulmate, but actually someone who's there and ready and able to support us in however way we need to be supported, not just emotionally, but actually through logistics and through keeping the house running. I think as women, sometimes we feel like we have to do it all because we want it all, so we have to do it all ourselves. That's really a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. So I would say for women, be open to approaching your spouse and being vulnerable, you know, not assuming that you're the superwoman and you have to take care of everything. And it's enough to bring home that big paycheck or that sole paycheck every 2 weeks or every month. So, we don't want you to lose the opportunity to do that. So make sure you're getting the support from him. And keep in mind that men want to help. They more than want to help. They want to be accountable. They want to really be your champion and your hero. So with that in mind, approach your husband with like the 2-3 things that you just want to take off your plate. You don't want to help with this stuff. You want to not have to think about it anymore. Yeah. So the mistake sometimes I make, and I think other busy moms make, is that we make these long to-do lists and we start tackling them. And then what happens is, you know, a few things get neglected. So at the very last minute, we ask our husbands to go pick up milk, or we ask him to pick up the kids from school, or we ask him to, at the last minute, whatever, X, Y, Z. And for your husband, it's no fun to just kind of be intermittently asked for help. Like, you know, what's better is if you come together as a team and you're like, here's how we can divide and conquer. And I think for men, the vulnerability that some may experience when he makes less or not anything is that for so long and still today, I think there's this expectation that men should be the main breadwinners and that their role is to provide. And forever, that has meant more specifically to provide financially. It's something that he wants to live up to. It's something that society expects him to live up to. And when that is not his reality, I think it can be very startling. It can cause him to question his identity in the relationship and his role in the relationship. So what we now need to do as a couple and also some homework for the guy is to figure out, what can I do in this relationship? What can be my new role? What is my new role? You know, what is my purpose now in the relationship? If it's not to provide money to bring home the bacon, what else can I do? And guess what? There's a lot that you can do. And it's a matter of opening your eyes to that. So together, you got to have to figure out where the vulnerabilities are and how you're going to repurpose yourselves in the relationship. And to understand that if she's bringing home the bigger paycheck, it's not something that she necessarily planned. She's not doing it to one-up you. It's just a matter of circumstance. It doesn't mean that she has more power in the relationship. It doesn't mean that he has less power in the relationship. It's just the way things are. And if you can come to each other with a new sense of purpose for each other and to have him not only help but be accountable, like to go to your husband and say, you know, honey, what would make my life so much easier and it would just mean the world to me. And this is kind of the language you want to use. You know, it's like, you would be my hero, mean the world to me. It would be the ultimate if you would take care of all the nutrition in the household, like do all the grocery shopping, plan the dinners, and I will help along the way. But like, if you can actually take this on as your thing, life would be happy. Life would be happier. Or it is maybe that he changes his hours at work if he is working, or he works from home if he can, to better support her and ultimately the family. And so figuring out what those adjustments are is critical. And I would also add that what's really important for both the husband and wife in the relationship is to understand that while gender roles don't matter and shouldn't matter and they shouldn't dictate who should do what in the marriage, gender is still real. And it's still important to respect.
Yes.
So what do I mean by that? Because I'm a woman, that doesn't mean I'm going to do the freaking dishes. Right. I'm not going to sit here and cook just because I'm the woman. If I want to, I will. In the marriage, you should devise your roles based on strengths and who wants to do things and who's better at doing things. But don't forget that you're a woman and that he's a man and vice versa, because that's still gender is a very powerful thing. And sometimes I think living in 2015, 21st century, we feel like gender shouldn't matter. And I think in certain cases, we shouldn't fall back on gender expectations. But when you're in a marriage and you're in a male-female relationship, to say that, you know, you both think of things the same way and react to things similarly and dissect things the same way, and that's not true. You know, there's a certain way that maybe she interprets things and he interprets things. And a lot of that does have to do with gender, what she wants versus what he wants, and where she sources her sense of identity and how he sources his sense of identity. A lot of times rooted in gender and, of course, other factors, but gender is really important. And I talk in the book about that. I interview gender experts. I have a whole chapter in the book where the title might incite a few people, but it's called Cater to the Male Brain. But what that really means is not, you know, bow to your husband or bow to patriarchy, but that really means if I have a female breadwinner who's coming to me and saying, I am spent, I am worked to the max. I don't have time for me anymore. I resent him because I don't feel like he's pulling his weight. Okay, so do you get a divorce? No. Maybe that's in your cards, but I would say let's put the brakes on and really talk about what you're missing in your marriage and how you can better communicate that maybe to your husband. Because it's not uncommon where I talk to these women and I say, okay, well, have you told him how you feel? Well, yeah, of course I have. We fight all the time. I'm like, well, that's not communicating. Fighting is not communicating. And actually, your husband is not you wearing a suit. He actually is this whole other person with a whole other set of DNA and gender issues and gender inclinations. So understanding just like a few of the words that better resonate with him than they do perhaps you are important to use in your communication to him. The biggest issue I had with presenting this book to the public was that it does respect gender differences, and it shows how you can play off the gender differences to make your marriage more harmonious. Some people don't want to hear that at all. And I can't do anything to change their opinions. So, but you know, it made for good television, I guess.
Well, the studies show that the,
right. The studies show, don't blame me. I'm just the messenger.
Exactly. Exactly. And you do share a lot of those resources in the book, at least as far as I've gotten in the book so far. There's a lot of other resources I'm thinking about picking up next. So very interesting stuff. And you're saying that the first step is to communicate to the other spouse, you know, hey, there's something on my mind. I need you to take care of it. Help me by taking it off my plate. And the same goes the other direction as well, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, in every marriage, there's going to be some communication breakdown, and especially over the issues of money, as we know. This adds on a whole other layer of complexity. So while it sounds like a no-brainer tip, like, of course we have to communicate, but I say it because we don't. You know, a lot of times we ignore speaking. And because this topic is so sensitive, you know, I mean, imagine you have to really get to a vulnerable place and to feel safe enough to say to your partner, I don't like being the breadwinner because I don't feel feminine doing it. Oh my gosh, can you imagine if that was actually said something out? Like if someone was saying that on a political campaign, this stuff is not politically correct, but it is raw and honest, and it requires us to be very vulnerable and share things with one another that we might be afraid to share because we don't think that we should be feeling these things. But those are our feelings nonetheless. And so if you're in a committed relationship and you feel like there is that honest give and take, then share it. And it's not to say that you can't make your marriage work as being a female breadwinner. But if this is something that is really bothering you, then find out what it is. What aspect of that is it that's bothering you? Is it because you don't feel supported? Is it because you feel like you're just the only person in the relationship sometimes? Which as some women do feel, you know, because bringing home that paycheck can feel like such an ultimate responsibility that it overshadows so much else. And we can inherit kind of a false sense of entitlement sometimes as the breadwinners, men and women. You know, we feel like we have the veto power. We can decide things. We don't have to tell our partner what we've decided to do with the money. And it can feel very isolated. Like I actually told my husband one day, it's very lonely here on this island of when she makes more. And what I meant by that was I feel like – and a lot of it was my own doing – was I just took on a lot because I just felt as the breadwinner, it was my role to make decisions. And sometimes I included him and sometimes I didn't. But truthfully, all I wanted was his input. I wanted – that team effort again. And I think it got lost a little bit because I wasn't communicating it. And he was, I think, also feeling insecure, suggesting things because he wasn't making more. When it came time to buy the home or the car or have the wedding, you know, I kind of took over, I dominated. And that was wrong of me. But also he didn't feel comfortable voicing because I think partly, and he's told me this, you know, very honestly, that making less sometimes made him feel like his opinion wasn't as worthy, which is such BS, you know? But these are the struggles that we put ourselves through that can be completely avoided. And it was ultimately once we just sort of, I spilled the beans and I was like, I don't like this. And he's like, I don't either.
And ta-da, now you work together as a partner because now you know each other's desires and the wants for the thing to work together, not just I need to do this because I am the breadwinner.
Right.
That's wonderful. Well, Farnoosh, thank you for your time coming on the show and sharing with us this information. I do recommend this book, not just to the lady listeners in my audience, but to the men as well. When She Makes More, 10 Rules for Breadwinning Women. And you can find that at most popular bookstores and, of course, on Amazon.com. Farnoosh, thank you so much for coming on the Money Plan SOS podcast.
Thanks so much, Steve.
This is a special edition of Hala from the Impala, coming to you from Charlotte Douglas International Airport. The top five signs that you're at the airport. Number five, you've rushed to get there so you can stand in the lines.
Report any suspicious persons or unusual activity to your nearest law enforcement officer.
Number four, you're asked to report any suspicious behavior. But where do you start? Number three, the beep, beep, beep sound is coming from a cart going forward, not backing up. Number two, there's absolutely no dollar menu. And the number one sign that you're at the airport, you're informed about your delay after boarding the plane. I want to share with you a quick testimony from a couple at our church. They went through Financial Peace University with us 3 years ago, and we've opened enrollment for our next session at our church coming up. And they gave their video testimony of how when they started 3 years ago, they had no idea how two teachers were going to be able to pay off over $57,000 worth of debt. Well, in the testimony, they shared that, you know, they've got their finances in order, they're paying attention to their money, and they will be debt-free in March of 2015. Well, I bumped into the husband in the hallways between services last weekend, and I said, hey, I would love to have you two as small group leaders because we're going to have a whole bunch of people signing up just because of your testimony. He said, let me talk to my wife. We'll get back to you. Well, that very same evening, he sent me an email, said, yep, we would love to be small group leaders and help you out. And guess what? We took a look today to see what remaining debt we had and found out that we actually have enough money to pay it off today. So what they did was they pulled the trigger, they paid off their last consumer debt on February 8th, 2015, rather than waiting until March. Because why? Because they were paying attention. If they hadn't stopped to think about it and look at it, they might have just went ahead and made the minimum payments as always. But because they paid attention, they were able to take a look at their money situation and see they could pay it off a month and a half early. That's awesome. And now they're going to be $57,000 of debt lighter than 3 years ago when they took the course. Now they're going to be an encouragement for others. You know, and that brings me to another thought, because whenever we start registration for the class, there's always somebody who thinks I can't take the course, or once they start the course, they think, well, this course really isn't for me because I have an irregular income. I have to tell you, that is one of the hardest things to try and help people with, because they can't really think of a way to start a budget. And there is the irregular income planning sheet, and Dave Ramsey walks through that in Financial Peace University. But what I'm able to do is walk them through my signature budgeting process, because not only does my process make you realize what the true priorities in life are, priorities you may not even realize, and it doesn't just help you to create a budget, but it helps you to see how far your money can go. And then if you make even more money than that, it shows you exactly where that next dollar should go, so you make that dollar go farther. I offer free coaching to those who come to my church and take Financial Peace University. So, of course, this is one thing that I'll walk them through. I'll invite them to stay after, or, you know, we'll schedule another time to meet. And I will walk them through, just as I do in my videos, I'll walk them through the virtual budget coaching course and help them to see how easy it is to create a budget even on an irregular income. The virtual budget coaching course solves the problem of an irregular income, because if you can rely on $2,000, you got to make those dollars work hard. Where do they go? Where is it most important to spend that money? And then what happens if I make $5,000? Where does that extra $3,000 go? The virtual budget coaching course solves that problem. It answers that question. And within about an hour, you'll have walked through the entire process from start to finish, have a reusable template, and you will make your money go farther just because you're paying attention to it. If you'd like to know more about this course, visit my website at stevestewart.me or sign up to take the course on your schedule at moneyplansos.com/start and get started today. I want to send a quick shout out to Veladia or Veladii, who left a 5-star review for the show on iTunes saying they've tried several podcasts, but now they're going to listen to this one and they're going back and listening to all the old episodes. Thank you so much for leaving that review. Not only does it encourage me, but it helps the show raise up in the rankings so more people might stumble across it. They might give it a shot, and then they may also be inspired to pay attention, not interest. Please leave a review or subscribe to the show in iTunes, or you can leave a review and subscribe in Stitcher. We're also available in TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, the smartphone app now available on Android and iOS devices, and I release bonus content only available to the subscribers of the newsletter or those who have the smartphone app. Links to everything that I've mentioned here will be available in the show notes at stevestewart.me/177. God bless you. Have a great week. And remember to pay attention, not interest.